What's going on, Badger fans? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Badgers, a live recruiting show with John Garcia Jr. Super stoked for this one. Already got several questions lined up, and obviously anytime we get John Garcia Jr. on, it is a blast. Let's go on Wisconsin.
You are Locked On Badgers, your daily podcast on the Wisconsin Badgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Going on, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Badgers. I'm your host, Ryan Herrings. As always, live show today with John Garcia Jr. Really excited for it. Today's show is brought to you by FanDuel. This episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. And let's get John Garcia Jr. on the show. John, thank you as always for jumping in, my friend.
Yes, sir, Ryan. Thanks for having me. Good to be on with you. Finally, talking some Badgers, man. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So several questions. This is a little different format. We're going to throw some at you. We got some already stuff preloaded. I do want to start with this, John. This is from Eklinders. John is the best. Love the recruiting shows. Just pump up the ego a little bit.
But that's not a question, but I'll take it for sure.
All right, let's start here. I want to kind of quickly, we haven't had a chance because they came in such a flurry to talk about a few more of the Cincinnati transfers. I want to get your take on them to kind of close the book there. Will Pauling, Quincy Burroughs, the two receivers. Let's start with Quincy Burroughs and just kind of get your feel on his game and what he's bringing to Madison.
He's bringing raw torque to the wide receiver position. Quincy is a blank slate coming out of high school up in Jacksonville in my home state. This is a kid that's got great size, first of all, 6'2", at this point, probably over 200 pounds. I mean, he was in the 185 range back in high school, ran track with legitimate speed. I mean, this is a top five, top 10 finisher in the state title race as the biggest participant. So there's legitimate wheels here at stake. And when you watch him play football, whether it's at wide receiver or elsewhere, there's just raw ability kind of oozing out, whether it's the football in the air, the ability to obviously run down the field and create separation. It's a blank slate. Is he the most polished receiver? No. Does he understand the entire depths of intricacy around the route tree and how to flip hips and win leverage? Maybe not just yet, but the physical foundation is so strong that it's one of those things that it almost doesn't matter at this stage. So in theory, a situational guy early on that you sort of slow cook, if you will. You know, he's more of a smoker type of situation than an air fryer, microwave kind of deal. But long term, man, this could be a breakout wide receiver prospect. And that's, I think, the good news in this marriage between him and Wisconsin. He didn't have to be the guy today. He doesn't have to be wide receiver one right now. He's got a lot of time to build up to that. But if it hits the right way and those stars align, he could be one of those gems you look back on from this class and say, man, that was not the first transfer we talked about, but he became more important as time went on.
Yeah, and you mentioned, like, if the stars align, that this feels just like the prototypical ball of clay guy. And I think that's kind of what you're saying to you. Get him in. A 2022 kid, so there's really no college data points here, but tall, fast. I have it on a good source that he's all of 200 pounds now, so he's 6'2", 200, and he can move. Those are the archetypes, right? Those are the guys that become receiver ones.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at, you know, a DK Metcalf, let's say, in high school, he was very angular, very linear. There was not a lot of polish in his game. AJ Brown, of the two Mississippians who stayed in state to play for Ole Miss, he was the polished one. He was the guy. But then DK caught him because he was so physically overwhelming that they became this 1-2 punch and almost a coin flip between the two. So it's taken him time to develop some of that polish, and he's probably still on that path. I think Burroughs has some of that same raw physical ability. He's not as rocked up as DK was in high school. I don't want to put unfair expectations on my guy Quincy, but he's got such a physical foundation of a great frame, athleticism, length, and I would say natural ball skills. I don't want to lose the ball skills in his lack of polish, but man, once the route running comes together and those intricacies catch up to the physical gifts, yeah, I think he's got a true boundary, almost wide receiver one type of future.
That's awesome stuff. And I think he brings something, to your point, unique into the room. Now let's shift gears to Pauling, Will Pauling, more of a shorter receiver, 5'10", 170. explosive, in my opinion, in the open field. Also bringing something different to the room. What were your thoughts on him, seeing him come over from Cincinnati?
The total opposite of Quincy Burroughs. Almost everything we said about Quincy does not apply to Will. Yeah, compact, sawed off, the type of guy that lines up in the slot and is just a headache to deal with unless you could somehow reroute him. He is incredibly quick, does know how to set up defenders from a leverage standpoint. And as you mentioned, there's some explosiveness going on here. Not only is he quick, but he's also fast. We oftentimes relegate players to one or the other. He's either quick or fast. This kid is both. I mean, this is a guy who can get into his route with some smooth and savvy abilities, but he can pop thereafter, and he gets to top speed quickly. He might not be 4.35, but whatever he is, he gets to it right now. And I think that's the biggest difference between playing fast and running fast. And I think obviously on the football field, it's not very linear. So if you can play fast, it can pop in a different way. So I think he's one that is a bit of a contrarian to not only, in my opinion, what we've seen with Wisconsin in the past, but even in some of these other portal additions, bigger, faster, stronger type guys, he's a nice counter to even that group that presents something different and exciting in the room, and maybe helps you in the return game along the way. And I also think there's a ceiling here for those marginal plays, right? The gadget plays that we know Phil Longo is going to trot out there and play laterally a little bit. Bubble screens, jet sweeps, reverses, all that fun stuff that really puts pressure on a defense pre-snap. I think Pauling is a guy who can help you execute some of those looks.
And, you know, what I find interesting here is we talked about these two, you know, Pauling, Burroughs, and then you had CJ Williams, you had Green from Oklahoma State. It feels to me like every single one of these guys brings something different. Like there's no redundancy between them, really.
Correct. And that's what you want, right? When you build a great wide receiver room, that's what it has. I mean, you can profile that concept all the way up to the highest level. I mean, looking at the NFL, watching the Bengals play, Ja'Marr Chase does something different than Tyler Boyd and totally different than T. Higgins. And again, not to throw crazy comparisons out there, but you need that variance because now who do you double? Who do you take away? Who do you press? Who do you play off of? If there's no commonality there, it's that much harder to identify because you're not going to cater a defense towards one or to combat one style when you've got an offense presenting 2, 3, 4 different styles. So even if it's these four portal guys become your starting four receivers, which look, it's unlikely, but if that was the case, it'd be tough to defend them because they do all bring something different to the table when you put their skill sets on the table.
Yeah, I love it. And Wisconsin fans are so stoked for it. All right, we're going to take a quick break, friends of our show, and then we're going to get into the comments section. I already see Jamel Howard. We talked about him, John. We want an update and just see where you're thinking. But lots of other comments, too, as questions. We got a question about Donovan Harbor, Corey Smith, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to get into all of that and more on today's Locked On Badgers with our good friend John Garcia Jr. But first, today's show is brought to you by our friends, our new friends of the show, FanDuel. FanDuel is our official new sports book at Locked On. NFL playoffs are here. We're certainly excited about it. And we're certainly excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. If you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features. You're going to make find betting easy, fun. New customers join today and you get $150 in free bets guaranteed. Let me repeat that, $150 free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has all your favorite bets from the money line, point spreads, player props. Plus, you can even combine bets, same game parlays. And listen, my Niners are continuing to truck through this, right? I have the Niners beating the Eagles. Give me that 2.5. Also have that game going over 45.5. Those lines are from FanDuel. All on an app that's safe, secure, super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Place your $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose. At FanDuel.com/LockedOnCollege. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sports book partner of the NFL. All right, let's bring our good friend John Garcia Jr. back on. John, as always, we definitely want to give you the opportunity to, where can people find your incredible work, all the amazing things you're doing?
Yeah, come hang out. Signing day in 8 days. There's still some big name prospects out there, like I know we'll talk about here in a minute. Let's do so on Twitter, John_Garcia_JR, or throughout the Locked On Network. You know, I'm bugging a lot of folks, not just Ryan Herrings.
No, you're never bugging me, man. We run out of time before questions with you, as always. Let's go here because I see this question already in the chat several spots. Rajiv talks about it. Thanks for doing a live show, John. Can you provide an update that you may have on Jamel Howard? Current thoughts, either us, Michigan, someone else. Several comments about Jamel Howard here. What do you think?
I think if it ended December 21st, it would be that simple, Wisconsin or Michigan. But it didn't end quite on that day. And now these last few weekends in January have become dramatic, right? We're ahead of the final visit weekend of the cycle. Ole Miss was gearing up to host him. And now all of a sudden, it looks like Miami is going to get the last official visit. So the folks really around the country looking for an interior guy, you know, Jamel Howard is one of the first names that pops up, and schools are clamoring to get him on campus to try to shoot their shot, have a puncher's chance at landing this signature come February 1st. So I think that's really important to consider when you look at the late stages of Howard's recruitment, because again, beforehand, even right after he decommitted from Wisconsin, there was still this thought of, well, Wisconsin's going to be in it when they figure things out, and then we'll see who the challengers are. But then coming out of into the new year, LSU just hosted him. Now Ole Miss, Miami have made plays for him. So first of all, I want to see where he ends up Friday night, Saturday morning, because there's a potential counter here for Ole Miss if he does end up at Miami. And then, yeah, we're still curious to see how these coaching staffs attack seeing him in the next couple of days before the dead period kicks in, I believe, on January 30th. So that's another important factor here, right? These kids aren't only taking visits. They're hosting coaches at school, at their house in different situations. So at this point, Howard expects to end the process February 1st. If that is true on National Signing Day, I think that's good news for the schools that have long been in it. So Wisconsin and Michigan in particular. If he stretched it, naturally you feel like the schools that are later to the game have a bit of a better chance to make a true play in his recruitment. I think of the new schools, LSU is the one to focus on the most. They've obviously outkicked their coverage from a year one expectation standpoint under Brian Kelly. They lost a ton through the portal and through just early graduation and the draft, all that stuff. And he just took that visit. Baton Rouge, very different from his Illinois roots. So I do think that's something that could be interesting late in the game here. If you're looking for a dark horse, but conventionally, Wisconsin's still very much in this race, and Michigan feels pretty good, as they have, again, dating back to right when he decommitted, or even before he decommitted from Wisconsin. So, look, kudos to Jamel. He bet on himself, and it's going to pay off with a whole lot of letters of intent being either mailed or emailed to his inbox come February 1st. So next Wednesday, that will be one of the eye-catching recruits that we're all waiting on to come off the board. But the Badgers, look, they're certainly in the thick of it. This new staff has been galvanized on the profile of hiring a Luke Fickell. You always felt good about potentially bringing back a Jamel Howard in this case, right? Midwestern roots, all of those things favorable toward the Luke Fickell profile. So I think all of those things remain in play. But look, when you get down to SEC country, you know, other things become bigger factors. You know, NIL is a part of this, fair or not. You know, it's coming up conversationally as these visits get changed late in the game. So we'll see where he confirms that final visit, and then we'll see where the chips fall on February 1st. But there will be a W on that table, and there's a very strong chance he picks it up.
And, you know, one of the things interesting with Howard, because we talked early on with Jamel Howard, right, about how he was initially rated kind of a mid 3-star, not a lot of offers. And we looked at the film, and I think we both said, this isn't just a leaner. This is a potentially disruptive big nose tackle. Now I think we're seeing that offer list catch up. What level of prospect is this? What are we talking about here? Is he getting these offers because there's just not much left on the board and he hasn't signed, or is this more reflective of his talent level?
To be honest, it's both. You know, everybody needs a big 300 pounder in the middle that can move, but to Jamel's credit, he's improved that stock every single year. We watched his junior tape probably the first time that we came on the show, Ryan, and It was very impressive in spurts. So it was about building on that. And he has. He had a very strong senior campaign from what I can gather, and more balance came along with that. So again, when you combine that with the fact that he did bet on himself and elected not to sign in the early period, here comes everybody else that does need a big interior guy. Who doesn't need that? Again, in this day and age of the portal and guys that are smaller and faster, who doesn't need that classic interior guy who also can move better than his listed size at 320 pounds would otherwise suggest? So I think this is both circumstance and Jamel himself, in terms of what led to this rise late in the game. More eyeballs on you, more colleges on you. There's going to be, more of an oomph to bump you up, and he's earned it in his own right. So a lot of times it's about when you're scouted as opposed to, how good you are. It's about when that happens. And if more eyeballs are geared towards, Marist, Illinois, then that's a good thing for a Jamel Howard, and his rankings and perception around his game have only benefited from it.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, if anyone sees me looking to the side, it's because my chat isn't updating as quick, so I have a second one on the side. That's what's going on. I would never look away from John Garcia and otherwise.
John, it's all digital here, guys. Don't worry.
It's all digital. Question from Tyson's Corner. Donovan Harbor, the great offense – well, I shouldn't say great – the highly rated offensive lineman in the 24 class from Wisconsin. Tyson says, my layman's view is he's big and strong, but also has surprisingly limited mobility feet athleticism. Am I taking crazy pills, John?
You're not. Look, it's a great point, first of all. When you talk about the evaluation game, and I've worked at two of the four companies that do this on a wide scale and one company that is doing it on a shorter scale, the bigger you get, the more it's about the projection. Look at the NFL draft. Like, Darnell Washington's being mocked as a first-round pick, although he probably had like 25 catches and was a good blocker. Not a great one, but a good one for Georgia this year. It's about the projection when you get that immense size attached to your name. So as you mentioned, Donovan is a mountain of a man, and he's got a long way to go from a technical standpoint and from a leverage standpoint. He plays high. He's tall. It's hard when you're that big to bring it on down. So I do think that's a part of the improvement that we need to see from him. And yeah, he's also, let's be honest here, no disrespect to this audience, he's playing high school ball in Wisconsin. There's not a daily demand to combat great leverage, great technique, or some kind of combination of the two like it would be in Atlanta or Houston or LA, whatever it is. So I do think he's kind of gotten away with being just the biggest, heaviest, strongest cat out there. So he's got a good frame. He's got great length. He's got a good mental foundation to where he does want to bury you. He's got that edge to his game. But yeah, from a technical standpoint, there is certainly a way to go with Harbor's game. But when it comes to his offer list and why he's such a coveted recruit in Ohio State and everyone's beating down the doors to get him, it's because it's a projection. This is something at a minimum 2 years away, but at a maximum 3 or 4 years away from coming to, a Saturday afternoon near you as a starter. And that's something that, on top of everything else, the egos in the sport at every level always feel like they can correct. If the frame and the edge are there, they can figure out the rest. So that's also an important factor in it. But yeah, all of that makes a lot of sense. Look, in scouting, you'll be infuriated by a lot of things. If you weigh offensive linemen that way, it's going to bug you. And it's probably, I don't have the numbers, Ryan, it's probably the reason why there's more star variance to elite NFL players and high school recruits at the offensive and defensive line spots than any other position. Like, I'm pretty sure a lot of the blue chip quarterbacks end up panning out. A lot of the blue chip running backs, DBs, receivers, tight ends, et cetera. It's harder to gauge those linemen. So I think you see that at the highest level, and we certainly deal with that scouting high school talent.
And that's something Josh News on the show talks about a lot too, the difficulties in scouting linemen just because of the size they get to at an early age. Do you see him, last question on Harbor, then we're going to take a quick break, get some more comments. Do you see him on the inside or outside at the college level?
He's so tall, it's tough to imagine him on the inside, but it's going to depend on how that frame develops. There's also something to be said for the scheme that he goes to. And that's one of the reasons why at SI, we actually valued where the kid was going as part of the evaluation, because if Donovan Harbor's, what is he listed at? 6 foot six, 6 foot seven, whatever it is. If he's going to a zone scheme that is going to ask its linemen to protect an amount of space as opposed to a man, we're going to give him that benefit of the doubt, even if he isn't the most mobile cat. But if it's a scheme that is going to come downhill, like a Michigan or traditional Wisconsin scheme that's coming downhill, we're not going to give him that benefit of the doubt. So I do think it matters where he goes, but I think the frame is going to at least have him get that opportunity to start at tackle and kind of work from there.
Love it. Let's take a quick break. Come back with more of your comments coming up next on Locked On Badgers with John Garcia Jr. But first, a quick break for friends of our show. All right, let's get John Garcia Jr. back on again. Really do appreciate everybody tuning in. John, a question here, and this is more of a big picture recruiting question, but I got several variations of this either in the chat or in DMs. Jaden Rashada, drama at Florida. If people aren't following this from a Wisconsin perspective, essentially a blue chip quarterback was promised something in the NIL. It's been reported $13 million. There was a lawyer involved. I think this question isn't getting into the weeds of that. It's more about, do you see more of this happening going forward in NIL at other places? Is this going to become more of the norm?
Unfortunately, yeah, I think so. But what my hope is that it gets nipped in the bud before it leaks out. You know, that's what makes this Rashada situation messy. It's not that it happened. It's that it got out. And numbers have been confirmed on both ends of this thing. That's where it starts to get really messy. But look, who in their right mind heard of any NIL situations before they became legal and thought this won't affect recruiting? You know, I mean, come on, man, we're humans. And in this country, money makes things move. I mean, it just is what it is. These situations are not going to go away. I think schools are going to be as careful as possible, and collectives, and that really touchy relationship between the two is going to be careful. But more and more states are granting NIL aid for high schoolers. I mean, so this thing isn't going away. It's only going in this direction more so. So Rashada is going to be kind of the fall guy, scapegoat for the perils of NIL. But it's certainly not going to be the last of this situation. I expect it to become much more frequent. It's just a matter of, does it get to the point where a letter of intent is involved here? Because I think that's what made this one so messy, was because now he has to ask out of the letter of intent, which has been granted by Florida as far as I can understand. But if it's nipped in the bud, or even if it's a disagreement, it happens well before signing day. Now you both parties can move on, and it's, you know, out of sight, out of mind. But when it's post signing day and signatures have been made both on these deals and on a letter of intent, it makes it that much more messy, because now time has gone by, and now people can publicly comment on it on all fronts. And that's really when things get crazy.
Did that $13 million number shock you?
Yeah, it did. I've heard crazy numbers at different points, you know, duffel bags and all this stuff, doing this over a decade. But $13 million is a lot of college coaches had a lot of things to say about it in my inbox. It was viewed as an absurdity for a high schooler. And I think that's probably the only point that everybody can see and say, yeah, that's probably a lot. And at the same time, in a capitalist society, who could blame Jaden Rashada or his dad or his friends or his camp or his lawyer, anybody involved? Agreed. If that is on the table, why wouldn't you take advantage again in capitalist America? That's what the game is. Even if you haven't proved a thing, the market is what the value says it is. And if that's the number, then that is your market on that day at that moment. So why not take advantage?
No, 100% agree from his perspective. And let's be honest, John, if he becomes a Heisman Trophy winning national title quarterback, it's probably worth it. I mean, yeah. It's so rare for that to happen, but yeah, it's probably worth it. Question here from Corey D. A couple more questions quick, and then we have to finish up here with John. How harmful would a poor to mediocre offensive output in 23 be to Wisconsin's future skill position recruiting? It seems like we're selling a lot of this Longo system. What if it doesn't work out?
There's luckily we have a whole lot of data points on both ends of this spectrum. We saw so many first year staffs really hit the ground running from an offensive standpoint. TCU is obviously the best example in the world outside of that national title game. LSU, USC, all these schools really hit the ground running. But conversely, the schools that missed the mark offensively in a rebuild year one, they're still okay on the recruiting trail. It's not a year-to-year deal. It's something that it's a long-term belief. It's easier to sell if it changes in a few months, surely, right? TCU's recruiting ceiling has increased. USC's back to USC, and LSU feels like it's close to being back to LSU on the recruiting trail. But Miami, for instance, they're not suffering. They're still able to galvanize and now make that the selling point. Hey, this thing isn't a quick rebuild. Come be a glue guy and help us accelerate this thing. So there's always a sell there. And I think it's even more understandable for a school like Wisconsin if something like that happens, because this is a total, not only physical roster overhaul, this is a philosophical overhaul simultaneously with new coaches, new personnel, all of those things. That one would be understandable. It's like when Georgia Tech stopped running that triple option. You knew it was going to take some time to get them out of that from a personnel and schematic standpoint, and they're probably still in that transition right now. So it's understandable when you're making a philosophical change in addition to a roster overhaul that a new coaching staff already comes on board with.
Last question here. We're going to wrap it up with John. His time is incredibly valuable. Ryan Anderson asks, with NIL, any rules about giving money to cover tuition around the scholarship limit? For example, a walk-on, maybe you could, a guy being on campus 10 months with Mordecai, could you just give him, throw money out there, let's say $5 million. Let's not put you on scholarly. Any rules against that, John?
Not that I've seen. That question or something similar has come up a few times. And yeah, folks at some of these big money schools are like, hey, we want to bring in as much talent as possible. So can somebody defer that scholarship in order to help out the next man up, if you will? Can a Caleb Williams, a Bryce Young, a CJ Stroud, who's making very nice money, can they pay for their own tuition and allow somebody else to get a scholarship? Everything I've been told is yes, that is absolutely possible. But again, you get to the kid in this society. Think of the age and the youth of these kids, asking them to give up $200,000 in some cases of the money that they have theoretically earned. Not easy, not easy. Somebody will do it and they'll be, you know, hailed a hero for it, and rightfully so. But simultaneously, you can't blame somebody for saying, well, I'll hold on to that down payment for a mansion one day. It's just not that simple. And I also think it's important to note, Ryan, that there's not a lot of players making that type of money to where they can write off their tuition for 4 years without blinking, right? I mean, that's not a common situation in college football, even amongst quarterbacks. You're still talking about the top 5 to 10% at the most. It's not something that, you know, hey, if you're a starting quarterback at a Power 5 school, you got $100,000 in the bank. It is not. It's far from that today. Maybe one day it gets there. But today, it is still far from that, as far as I understand.
Now, one more really quick question. And again, I apologize for all the questions we don't get to. I'll try to wrap these up and get to John on another day. And the chat is acting wonky, too, so they're not all coming through. But this is from Darren Wyman. He's talking about Corey Smith, Jordan Marshall, two big-time running backs, Corey Smith, the in-state talent. How hard would it be, John, if you have a feel on those two as well, but to get both of them to sign at the same spot? Obviously, running back split carries more than a quarterback would, but – how difficult would that scenario be?
It's not. It's something that, coming up as a running back right now, you have an understanding that the bell cows are the dinosaurs of yesteryear. You know, whether it's the highest level or certainly college football, there is an understanding that there will be a shared workload. And that's something that is being sold as an advantage. I mean, again, to tie it back to Phil Longo in North Carolina, when he had Williams and Michael Carter a couple years ago, both expected to go super high in the draft, NFL teams viewed that splitting of carries as a good thing. because now it's going to enable you to have more wear on your tires. That even though the workhorses are dying, the shelf life for backs is still very, very short. So if these kids are already thinking either NIL or NFL coming out of high school, that's something that could actually be sold as an advantage on the recruiting trail. And Phil Longo's been there and done that. And Wisconsin has been there and done that. They've usually rotated one guy in as a true primary and secondary, but as time goes on, it will become more of a 50-50 deal, especially in a Phil Longo offense. And I think that's a good thing for the ceiling of Wisconsin depth at the position. Maybe not for the top guy who still wants to be that bell cow, but for most backs, there's an understanding that they will have a shared load. In fact, this weekend I was at an event in Miami talking to blue chip running backs, and multiple backs told me that they are willing to be that third down complementary piece to save their legs for their upperclassmen and or NFL careers. So this is something that's being communicated at a very consistent level throughout college football.
Yeah, and that's such a change from where running backs were in the 90s.
Yep.
Thank you, John. As always, he is John Garcia. Excellent. We are smarter because he was here. I apologize. I didn't get to every question. I'm going to try to wrap some of these up, and we'll hit him with John next time. Next time he comes on, we'll kind of do a recap of some of the stuff we didn't get. John, thank you so much. For everyone tuning in, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. We'll try to do more of these going forward.
Thanks, guys.
On Wisconsin, and we'll talk tomorrow.